Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
If you wish to give me a present?
I'd like to be a dentist.
Welcome to the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. This week, we're going to do another Rankin Bass special. We're going to be doing Frosty the Snowman. Kevin Undergar here with Ann Sleeman, Christian Blatt. Evan Westman is sitting in the Gen Z seat. And of course, Kelsey will be representing the Millennials. Guys, just general thoughts. I'm going to go around the room. Christian, you just saw this with your kids this week anyway. Your thoughts on Frosty?
I think it's especially when you're watching with small children. My son's 7, my daughter's 5. They know that we watch this every year. They're old enough to remember that we always see Frosty. And the reason why I might give a goat status to Frosty is its runtime, because it keeps them, you know, it's I don't know, it's an old show, so it's like probably 28 minutes instead of 30. We watch it on a DVD because you know, I need the physical media. I don't need to have to try to find what streaming service it's on. So I have a set of all the great specials, and we watch this every year. And I mean, they love it. They, you know, you hear the song, the Frosty song, all the time anyway. But to actually kind of watch it, you just kind of remember, you know, there's so many things that that, you know, elicit a little bit of laughter. You know, the rabbit, the magician, you know. You know, then this is the year where my son Felix is asking me, why does he always say happy birthday? I'm like, 'cause it's his birthday again. You know, it's like the hat went on his head, you know?
How about that? So,
I didn't even connect that.
Yeah. So it's now we're starting to get the Twitter level critique of like, yeah, but why happy birthday? You know,
speaking of Twitter, I know a few years ago that all of Twitter was, huffing and puffing over the fact that the kids were all in shorts.
Yep.
During winter. Yeah. And of course, yeah, that conjured outrage, which, you know, conjured outrage in this house as well. I had to shut it off and protest, but no, I'm just kidding. And maybe it wasn't even an outrage, but you know, I'm starting to learn that the internet press is more guilty than the people themselves, because they're, you know, people just making comments. How come these kids are in shorts in the winter? And then the internet was like, oh, millennials are all aglow over the fact that Frosty's kids are all in shorts.
Right.
I digress. Okay.
No, but a lot of times too, a comment like that is an actual joke, and then some site runs with it, and like the original person's like, you know, I was just joking. You know?
Yeah, really. Just making an observation.
You know, we don't know what state they live in. You know, you'll go to places, you know, you go to Portland, you even go to Alaska the right time of year. People do have on shorts and like big heavy fleeces. Something about the combination, you know.
Yeah. I've seen that before too. All right, Ann, your thoughts on Frosty?
Okay, interestingly enough, as a kid, this wasn't in my top couple, but as an adult, I look at it a little bit differently. Like, I'm like, wow, this is really the classic good versus evil, happy show. And I've come to, this is now in my top probably three of the animated Christmas specials. So Professor Hinkle has long been one of my favorites, just with his busy and his rantings. So I've always been a fan. I don't know why I always go for the evil guy in the shows as my favorite. I might need to look into that more myself. But yeah, classic good versus evil, really fun, happy. I like the animation of it, just how simple it is. And love the song as it just goes through the thing. And it's just happy and easy to watch.
And, you know, maybe you like it because he, like a lot of the Rankin Bass villains, he gets redeemed.
Yeah.
That's true.
Good point.
That's a thing in there. Not all of them, not all of their stories, but a lot of them. The bad guys get redeemed. Okay. Evan, I'm going to jump down to Gen Z. So, Ev, okay. So, how many times did you watch this as a kid?
I actually didn't. I was trying to remember once I found out that this was the one we were going to be doing. I was like, have I actually seen this all the way through? Because I know it was on in the room at some point. I don't know if we ever owned this, though. We did watch a lot of Christmas specials, some of the ones you guys cover. I've seen Rudolph a bunch of times. I've seen Year Without a Santa Claus a bunch. And I know I've seen parts of this. There were, when I was watching it yesterday, there were parts I was like, okay, I've definitely seen this, but the whole chunk in the middle, I have zero memory of. So if I've seen this all the way through, I don't remember.
But did you know the character of Frosty at least?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then what did you think of this? How did this one rank for you?
I mean, without nostalgia, I'm sorry that I'm kind of neutral on it. I was hoping I'd have a little bit stronger feelings on it, but for the most part, I'm fine with it. There was nothing that was particularly charming to me with it, and nothing that I particularly didn't like. I'm not huge on Professor Henkel. Sorry to disagree with you, Anne.
No, that's all right.
But I did find him like vaguely annoying, but certainly not a deal breaker. I did find the animation to be better than I was expecting. I think also I had assumed this was a fair amount older than it was. I saw it's, is it late 60s that this came out? I think I assumed it was like a couple decades older. On the whole, I guess I'll use the term that I hear everyone of my generation use. I'd say it's mid, but I don't want to take it away from anyone who is a fan of it.
I am hearing what you're saying. I'm going to save my own comments as well. So Kelsey, so let's go over to millennials, because Kelsey's been very critical of all of these, by the way. Don't feel bad.
I'm also,
well, Kelsey's just opposed to big Christmas in general.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's trying to tear down the machine of the.
That's right.
Yeah, that's her job. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm laughing because I feel like that would usually be my take, but I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was short. Right. It was sweet. It was nice. I agree with Anne. I liked the evil guy. I thought he was fun. Loved Frosty. Thought he was cute. Loved that he was saying happy birthday. Christian didn't realize that. Thank you for that little note. I thought it was fun. I liked it.
All right. Also, I do love that your first favorite thing was that it was short.
Yeah, no, I didn't really. That's so telling.
It does help with my kids. You know, Rudolph lags a little bit.
It helps with our attention spans.
It's always tomorrow. They start checking their watch. Yeah. But what I want to say for Evan's comment, I'm glad that it was mid and not meh, because I feel like that's really the scale that his generation uses.
I don't know if they use meh anymore, Christian.
Yeah,
I don't hear anyone using meh personally.
All right. Well, you let me know what the modern day equivalent. There has to be a meh. I just don't know what it is, but I'm glad to hear that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that because we brought up Professor Hinkle, I did look up Billy DeWolf on IMDb, and I was surprised that he worked a lot in like episodic television, but he doesn't have like, oh, I know him from this. He really doesn't have that. But the phrase that was used to describe him is burlesque clown Billy DeWolf. And because he really is out of vaudeville. And Kev, that's something that we talked about when I sat in for the first part of Year Without a Santa Claus, is there's so much like these specials all ooze with old Hollywood. And these people were old at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this more so than even a Year Without a Santa Claus, these are people who had well-established careers. Let's just say they were on the downside. But if they had used contemporaries, I don't think that these would hold up in the same way.
Yeah, like Parker Stevenson or like, you know what I mean?
Hey, think of he shares my birthday. Don't do any.
Well, no, I'm not even knocking him. I'm just trying to think of like who, like, and even he would be too young. But I mean, but in 1969, whoever was the kind of pop star of the day, you may not even know today.
Right.
I mean, you wouldn't even know that. So there was,
unless Dustin Hoffman was Frosty, that would have been epic if they,
that would have been, but even he was at the, he was just hit The Graduate. You weren't getting Dustin Hoffman for this.
No.
So I'm thinking, you know, you would have gotten a TV star of some kind, but again, that
like so Jackie TV, Gleason is Frosty maybe.
But even he would have. They'd
never be able to find Frosty. It'd be like, oh, he's passed out drunk in front of Toots Shore's bar again. Well, I think he's gonna melt.
It's interesting you brought that up, because Jackie Vernon, who plays Frosty, was very had a lot of similarities to Gleason, which we'll get into a little bit later. But when we get over to the cast, this one had, I feel like, the oldest cast in all of the legends. And like you're saying, the vaudeville and silent films. I mean, it's crazy how far back some of these people dated.
I mean, Jimmy Durante was born in 1893. So I think that's all you really need to know.
I mean,
he was
right?
born before the 20th century.
1893.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do think that there's certain pieces of content that are quality. And then there are certain pieces of content that we love due to nostalgia. I see it in Gen Z. I see it in millennial as well. There's things in your childhood that you guys are obsessed with that I'm like, wait, this is terrible. This is garbage. And I do think that there is, and for Frosty, for me anyway, it's a nostalgia factor. I think, Ev, I'm with you. If I took the nostalgia out, it would be a cute cartoon. I think it is well animated. Rankin and Bass, I mean, I give them so much credit for, technically speaking, how advanced they were and how the newer versions, even the newer versions of Frosty, all look terrible compared to this. And there's cute moments, and definitely, like, I can see watching this with kids, and I love the idea that it's 30 minutes. But it's, to me, the way I think Year Without Santa Claus is such a masterpiece. I think that Santa Claus Has Come to Town is such a masterpiece in storytelling. I think this is fine. I think it's good. I think it's cute. I think, Evan, if I didn't have the nostalgia, I probably wouldn't be so drawn to it every year either. And I think it's funny but there are certain pieces of content. I want to say that with or without a nostalgia are quality. Like, I'll go to It's a Wonderful Life. I'd like to think that everyone since the 50s has been watching that out of some bit of nostalgia, but you still can't get away from the fact that that's one of the greatest films that's been made. Sure. In my very strong opinion. So, whereas I know there's some other, and I was going to get people upset with Christmas Vacation. I think a lot of people watch that out of nostalgia. I think it's fine, but I would not put Christmas Vacation up there with It's a Wonderful Life or some of the greatest Christmas movies.
You know, I'll interject on Christmas Vacation. 2 years ago, I finally, after years of badgering my wife to watch it, we sat down and watched it. And I was like, oh, the memory in my head wasn't quite what I thought it was. And another one that I do love because of nostalgia from the same era is Scrooged with Bill Murray. There are great scenes in that, but the movie as a whole, it lags a couple of times and you don't remember the lag, you know, and Frosty doesn't have a chance to lag because it's so short.
Because it's so short.
You're in and out.
I have to say though, on Christmas Vacation, Margo and Todd as the couple, the yuppie couple next door are two of my favorite supporting characters in any Christmas show. I just think they're a riot.
Yeah, well, the wife is Julia Louis-Dreyfus, right?
Yeah. I don't know who plays Todd.
It's somebody from SNL, I think. I just forget.
No, and there's great acting in there, and there's some great lines and great moments. I watched it with my wife. She had never seen it, and she was just like, because she had heard so many great things about it, and she was like, Anyway, but I think that there's definitely something to be said about nostalgia that takes a hand in our opinions of these things. But I also don't want to discredit some of the stuff that is just timeless and just well done. You know, I think Rocky is the original Star Wars. I mean, there's of course nostalgia in it for me in my childhood, but at the same time, those are two, I think, outstanding works free of nostalgia.
Rocky is a great example because Rocky, the first one, is a work of art and it's amazing. Rocky 3 has a lot more nostalgia built in.
Nostalgia, yes.
And with Star Wars, it's like the first Star Wars is legitimately a great film. And then each iteration, it's like sort of like the old mimeograph machine where you keep copying it. And it's like, it's a little bit harder to see this time, but I still get it.
So Evan, a mimeograph machine was a machine that would be located in, I believe, in the teacher's room. So they would think these rooms called the teacher's rooms that like cigarette smoke would pour under the door and coffee, but they would have their mimeograph machine in there. This is before copiers and everything would go through and it had a really lovely smell as I recall.
Oh, the best. I'm smelling it now.
The papers were purple because that's what color the ink was.
Yes.
And if your teacher maybe spent a little bit too much time in the teacher's room, they were still wet when they were handed out to you. The ink would be wet on the paper and you could get the purple on your fingers.
Fresh and your teacher might be a little bit loony.
Don't smell what's in the coffee cup at that time of day.
So it's
Seen one of those and not known what it is. They definitely were not using those when I was in school, though.
No, I don't think you were. Okay, you guys. So anyway, it's funny because we do see a little schoolhouse here in the traditional schoolhouse setting of the day. I'll give you guys a little background on this, and then we'll get to the synopsis. So as we said,
this first aired in 1969 on December 7th. It was on CBS, and it was actually the fourth Christmas special produced by Rankin and Bass. It originally followed the fourth showing of Charlie Brown Christmas. And then you were saying that it was with Charlie Brown Christmas for years as a package.
That I remember that as a kid, and it was one of the greatest TV nights in the kid year because you got to watch both of them, you know, right after each other. And it was, if I recall correctly, it was usually on a Tuesday. So, you know, you made sure you got everything done first, and then your parents were like, okay, you got to be extra good so you can stay up late and watch both of the specials because you got to stay up till 9.
And, you know,
big deal as a little
guy. Remember the sponsor? I remember Dolly Madison was the big sponsor.
I remember Dolly Madison for the
Peanuts website one. For people who wanted to cheat on their spouse.
No, that came.
That's Ashley Madison. I'm sorry.
Ashley Madison.
You
know what?
You digress.
Sorry. I thought about whether or not I wanted to say that. I went with it. I honestly know a lot of stuff from this era. What was Dolly Madison? I actually don't know what that is.
It was pastries.
Yeah, it was like Hostess cakes, but worse.
Oh, the poor man's version. Poor man's,
it was like Hostess, Drake's, Little Debbie's, and then Dolly Madison.
You save your money if you want Little Debbie's. We're a Dolly Madison household.
Exactly.
So
Hydrox only.
Hydrox.
Hydrox. Oh,
so Hydrox, Evan, is the alternative to Oreo and Kelsey, just so you know. I don't even know if that's
okay. I have heard of that. Okay.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Okay. You were always Hydrox, never Oreo.
That's why we're here.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, at least you guys weren't Pola Cola. Like, my family always got the generic soda.
Oh, we had Shasta. We had Shasta. CNC. So, yeah. Coke was for when I was at friends'
the rich
house.
People.
I'm talking about Coca-Cola.
Not yeah, the rich people
had RC Coca-Cola. Cola.
RC.
I dreamed about RC Cola.
Yeah, I dreamed about Shasta Christian. So that's how far down on the ladder we were. Okay, so this special is based on the 1950 Gene Autry hit song "Frosty the Snowman." And if you remember when we did Rudolph in 1949, Autry had recorded Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Interestingly enough, this was only a B-side for Autry. It was "When Santa Claus Gets Your Letter," which I've actually heard before and was a mild hit. But funny enough, this wasn't meant to be the hit. You know, this was his B-side. And of course, it becomes second only to Rudolph in terms of his library of Christmas songs. Rankin Bass, you know, plays the safe bet and was like, well, we took his Rudolph song, made that a huge hit. So why don't we take Frosty and do the same? And of course, they were right. That pays off. Rudolph is number one, and this is probably number two in their library of specials. The reason Frosty's animated versus claymation was due to the fact that Rankin Bass wanted it to resemble a Christmas card. It was kind of interesting. Paul Coker Jr. was the artist responsible, and if I think we talked about on Rudolph, but oh, actually, he didn't work on Rudolph, but he worked on pretty much every other one of the claymation specials for Rankin Bass. He just passed away in 2022. God, I would have loved to have gotten into this guy's head. This special was written by the great Romeo Mueller, who wrote so many of the Rankin Bass classics. I think he's so underrated as a storyteller. The stories he wove for them, incredible. And then, again, I'm going to say underrated a lot, but the third piece of the puzzle to me is Maury Laws, who did the musical scores. Once again, just a great, great score that has you, you know, singing throughout the special, and even after the special's done. And as far as the cast, like we mentioned, Rankin Bass does the usual, going with all the old Hollywood legends, as they did with Burl Ives, as they did with Fred Astaire, as they did with Mickey Rooney, as they did with Shirley Booth, and this time we have Jimmy Durante. Now, it's funny, Evan and Kelsey, had you heard of Jimmy Durante?
I don't think so.
Never.
No. Wow. Yeah, he's a huge, huge icon. Huge icon. Anyway, Durante was a staunch Catholic who loved children and working with charities. And like Burl Ives did with Rudolph, Durante recorded his own version of Frosty, which also became a top 10 hit. Actually like his version better than Gene Autry's, just like I like Burl Ives' version better than Gene Autry's as well.
Yeah, same.
Jackie Vernon, who I mentioned earlier, voices Frosty. Vernon was actually a racy comedian known for doing the Dean Martin roast. He's another one that we lost way too soon, somewhere in the 80s. He passed, but was kind of a big funny man. A little funny story about him is he was a huge Charlie Chaplin fan, and he used to write Chaplin over and over again when he started out in his career, and eventually became semi-famous, or, you know, famous enough for back then as a character actor. he stops writing them because he never hears back from Chaplin. Well, he bumps into Chaplin at a restaurant, gets the courage to go up to the table and introduce himself. He says, oh, hi, you know, you probably don't know me, but I'm an actor here in the United States, a comedian. My name is Jackie Vernon. And Chaplin said to him, why did you stop writing me? So it's kind of an like his story he loved to tell. Professor Hinkle, like you said, the magician was portrayed by Billy DeWolf, who was another eccentric comedian, probably more than likely, not that this matters, but he was more than likely closeted, you know, and back then in Hollywood, it was a no-no for you to, you know, I mean, be out.
Who wasn't closeted, you know? I mean,
right? It's probably the better, yeah.
You had Liberace, you know, in his sequin cape saying, I just haven't met the right girl yet. You know? And you're like, right. Okay, Lee, thanks.
Such a different time. Man,
when he chose to go into dancing as opposed to being a Baptist minister like his parents wanted to be, that probably was a flag.
Yeah, this is you're talking about Billy DeWolf.
Yeah.
Yes. Paul Frees. Paul Frees, you'll see his name come up a lot with Rankin and Bass as a voice actor. He plays the traffic cop, the ticket man, and Santa. Rocky and Bullwinkle fans may recognize him as the voice of Boris Badenoff. Now, that brings us to another veteran who was paired with him. So Paul Frees, Mel Blanc calls him the man of a thousand voices. But June Foray, who played Karen, and there's going to be a big giant asterisk attached to this, June Foray plays Karen, was not only called the female Mel Blanc, they actually would say that Mel Blanc was the male June Foray. And this woman had an incredible body of work. She lived to almost 100, only died a few years back, and tons of voices. You would have heard her from probably most notably Rocky the Flying Squirrel from Rocky and Bullwinkle, but Smurfs and other Disney projects and such. Here's the big asterisk. In 1969, she plays Karen. However, in 1970, they dub her voice out, and they dub Freeze's voice, not Freeze's voice for those other characters, but Paul Frees had played some of the children. They dubbed all their voices out and hired new child actors to play them. So June Foray, you know, to her death, still didn't understand why. I have some information on it that I think is the reason why they did it. But for years, no one knew who played Karen. And then, of course, the internet fans being as crazy as they are, it seems like it's one Suzanne Davidson, who didn't seem to do much work other than that. She only had a couple of things and no one's known much about her. It's funny. As I was doing the synopsis, I think it was around the time where they put the hat on Frosty and they're trying to come up with names. One of the voices, now, because they'll say in all of our notes that June Foray's voice was completely scrubbed from this special. That's actually not true. If you listen carefully, you hear, and if you're a fan of Rocky and Bullwinkle and you know Rocky the Flying Squirrel's voice, you hear a child's voice say a couple of words. Maybe I think it was maybe one of the names of the suggestions for Frosty that's in the Rocky the Flying Squirrel voice. It's actually June Foray. I totally tell it's her. That still is in there.
They forgot to dub it out.
They didn't dub it out. And I think the reason
I'm sure she still got paid residuals.
Handsomely.
I'm sure there were no issues with that, right?
No, the Foray estate is still getting huge checks.
Anyway, she was also a great Howard Stern guest, I think, is something that, you know.
Really?
Yeah, they actually were replaying it recently. It must be because it was Christmas time. You know, in 1990-ish. Yeah, they would have her do voices for bits and stuff. And I think she had a good sense of humor. So she would, I'd have to, you know, this is sort of a vague recollection. I think she did the Rocky voice for some bits that they did, because I don't think that they were doing any new Rocky content at that point.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out.
And by the way, I didn't know any of this. I didn't know that her voice was anywhere in here. But I guarantee when I watch this next Christmas, I'm going to text you. I'm like, oh, yep, there's June Foray. I hear it now.
That one little word. Well, yeah. I think that it's because they sounded too old.
That would make sense.
I think they just sounded too old and they wanted it to be genuine with the kids. And so, by the way, whether it was Suzanne Davidson or whatever, I've only known my whole life that version playing Karen. So for me, I think that it was wonderful, the young person's voice that was used to do it. So I think that's why the
charm of the Charlie Brown specials is that you don't get the best line readings from those kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not polished. And, I don't know. I'd love to see the original version and see it. I bet it just was maybe too slick. And I was like, let's have it sound like kids.
Yeah.
But, I could see making that decision. And you know what? Sometimes producers and network executives have good ideas. I just think it's worth
once in a while.
Out.
Well, yeah. Or maybe it was test groups the first year that it came out. And there might have been, test groups. I commend Rankin Bass for doing any kind of rework. Because usually this stuff is set it and forget it. And as we saw with Rudolph, the fans felt bad that the Island of Misfit Toys never got rescued. They went and actually reshot an entire sequence to accommodate years later, which I'm so impressed by. I'm so impressed by that. I mean, think of how many films that miss the mark or have moments in them that have tainted the movie that it's like if they just spent that kind of time and money, they could make the difference. There's one ugly scene in Revenge of the Nerds that now for Evan and Kelsey's generation completely ruins the film. Oof. Go and edit that thing right out, figure it out, fix it, and it's a great film other than that. But I think I really commend them being willing to do it. And like I said, for me, if I could hear the Rocky the Flying Squirrel voice as Karen, it would be a little unnerving. It wouldn't be as pure and as sweet, I don't think.
Yeah, when you have the famous recognizable voice actors, the animated series for Ghostbusters, the real Ghostbusters, the first year Lorenzo Music did the voice of Dr. Peter Venkman. That's Bill Murray's character.
Wow.
And Lorenzo Music was Garfield. And at some point, Bill Murray actually said to someone, "It's like, why do I sound like Garfield?"
Right.
And so then the next year, Dave Coulier did the voice and it was a Bill Murray impression, because it's like, it's Garfield. And of course he was also Carlton the Doorman on Rhoda. So it's like, sometimes there's this like elite group of voice actors where their voice is too recognizable.
Yes. It takes you out the other way. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry to interrupt.
I love it. There was a cartoon I remember watching with my niece years ago. It didn't make it very long. I think it was called David the Gnome and Tom.
Oh,
Bosley,
I used to watch that with my little sister. Yeah,
and Tom Bosley played it.
Mr.
And
C.
I couldn't divorce from Mr. Cunningham, Tom Bosley from Happy Days being David the Gnome. I couldn't get into the cartoon because of it.
Unless they'd turned into the skit and brought on Henry Winkler and Ron Howard.
Right. That'd be different. Yeah. Then I'd be all in. Frosty does have many sequels. Frosty's Winter Wonderland, Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas July, Frosty's Return, and then The Legend of Frosty the Snowman. Some animated poorly and some claymation. I've heard that these range from mediocre to just bizarre and weird. I'm in the Evan camp where maybe I've seen bits and pieces, but I've not seen these. So maybe in the future we'll have to cover up some of these. Do you have any recollection of the sequels, Christian?
Frosty Returns still airs every year. It's John Goodman, who I think you mentioned John Goodman was in a follow-up to Year Without a Santa Claus, right? So
right.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's the go-to for Christmas cheer. And and by the way, King Ralph, an underrated film. But in any case, I think that it lacks all the charm of Frosty. The animation, even though I remember when it premiered in the 90s, the animation is so far inferior to, to the animation of 30 years earlier. And, a lot of times people just it just missed the mark. You can get a lot of great holiday content, more recently. But this was just like, all right, this is you hear the cash register drawer opening.
They want to
get an hour of primetime television. They can't share it with Charlie Brown like Ann was talking about, so let's just put a second Frosty in there. And I think that it's worth watching, sort of like in the way of like, oh, let me watch these deleted scenes from a movie. And a lot of times you're like, oh yeah, the movie's not as good with these deleted scenes in there. But it's like, as sort of like a sociological experiment, it's like worth seeing, okay, this is what they thought would be a good follow-up to Frosty. And I personally don't think they were correct. My kids have never seen it. That'll tell you everything.
Yeah, that's obviously indicative, right? Yeah.
No, and then they made that one, was it Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July? That was like full length. Yeah. Agree with both of you. Like, no nostalgia for any of those. I think it was that one as a kid, and just thinking the animation was weird. And why did Frosty all of a sudden get skinny? And I was out. I don't even think I made it through the whole version then.
Yeah, well, Frosty was on Atkins at that point, so you should actually be proud of him.
Yeah,
he was Anne, you're reminding me what I remember as a kid. That was way too. It's like Zack Snyder's Frosty and Rudolph in July. Rudolph's Shiny New Year, I think, is a good follow up, but it's good enough. You know, I liked Baby New Year as a kid.
We will get there.
Yeah, no, I can't. I don't know. From someone who loves all these, haven't seen any of them.
You know what?
I've seen the clips, and they do look, technically speaking, they look horrible. And it's funny, you know, I think the one good thing about the. One of the good things about the internet in terms of content is that I think you can't get away with, producers can't get away with that stuff anymore. You can't take like a piece of content or intellectual property that is near and dear to people and go, we'll just mail it in and make a quick buck, because you just get roasted. But these were all made at a time where there wasn't a community that could be vocal and loud and strong enough to say, what are you doing? This is terrible. You know what I mean? So I think, yeah, if they did it today, they'd have to be kept to task.
Well, you know, there's a couple of mindsets when you're creating content for children. And as adults, you can tell which one they went into it with. There's the kids are stupid. They'll watch anything. So let's, you know, cut every corner we can. And by the way, as a kid, I watched a lot of that stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Well, if you look at the mid-60s to the early 80s of animation, it was horrible. If you look back, because, you know, when you think of Popeye and Warner Brothers and the old Bugs Bunny stuff and how well done that was.
Oh, yeah.
From the 20s to the 40s and early 50s. And then you just see that. Then it was, we would grow up in that. Yeah, they're just so dumb. They'll just eat their sugared cereal in front of the TV. And they were right. Yeah. And they were right. And they'll know no better, sadly enough. Interesting to note, Karen, even though that Frosty's Winter Wonderland is a sequel, Karen does not appear, nor is she even mentioned, but it's in the same town. So I think maybe it's many Christmases later.
Yeah, okay. She'd gone off to Passages in Malibu. She had a rough stretch. So, you know, but she's clean. She's clean and sober 8 years now. God bless her.
God love her. Yeah, love and light. Over to Karen. Here's the one controversial thing that we found. Toward the end scene of Frosty, when Karen is arguing with Professor Hinkle, I found a controversial nude shot that I sent to Anne of she's standing kind of on her, you know.
I think like this might have been why she had to leave.
Yeah, she's standing on her tippy toes and she's arguing with Professor Hinkle, and her little red dress or whatever it is lifts up high, and it's... She's completely naked underneath.
She is.
And they didn't know that, no one's ever said why, but the guess is that maybe the animators were being a little naughty, being a bunch of pranksters. By the way, like, really? With a 7-year-old girl, guys? Like,
Kev, I actually have a theory on that ties into the June foray being dubbed over that I wanted to hold off till you mentioned the new shot. Yeah. So I think June may have been a little bit of a B on set, and, you know, because she was a little bit more of a known actress, like she is the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and all of that. And I think the animator, the character designer, Paul Coker, who was, you know, he had worked on Mad Magazine and all of that. I think she was especially not kind to him. And he was like, all right, guys,
is that the people on set?
This is my own theory.
It's your own theory. It's not
nothing. He was like, I'm going to get the last laugh and throw a nude shot of Karen's character in there at the end.
Well,
it'll be really fast, so most people won't notice it, but we'll know and we'll be able to laugh. And, you know,
well, I think what makes the most sense to me, because if you have nothing to base it on, I don't want to say any more about that. But I will say, no, but what makes sense is, you're right, he came from Mad Magazine, Coker.
Yep.
So he's probably had a little devilish side to him where he's like, I'll just toss this in there. But it looks intentional.
Yeah.
Something maybe you're going to look for next time you watch it. And I want to say, it's interesting because, you know, so many celebrities, older celebrities, are as nostalgic for this content as we are. Mario Cantone, the comedian, is one of them. He thinks the Rankin Bass library is equal to what Disney's library is. And is just obsessed with this. That being said, he is not a fan of Frosty and is a huge Professor Hinkle fan because he feels very strongly like the poor guy just wanted his hat back. Right. He was like, it was his hat. And yeah, he got rid of it.
For oh my second. God.
And then when it, she, he's like, oh, wait, it's not broken. I'll take it back. And that's it. He's like, give the effing guy his hat back. So that was Mario Cantone's big thing.
I love that.
And kind of watching it again, I'm like, yeah, I don't really know if it's finders, keepers, losers, weeper. I mean, I don't know. That's an old 70s, like, finders, keepers, losers, weepers. But really, at the end of the day, I don't know. Maybe it was his hat to begin with.
Right.
I hate to undermine the whole thing on everybody, but that's a Mario Cantone thing. I mean,
they kind of took his hat and his pet.
I don't think his pet wanted to be with him, so I'm kind of okay. I think Hocus wanted to be
free. That was escape for the rabbit. I was a little split on the ownership of the hat as well, though.
Oh, really? Yeah, Evan, right? So interesting. Evan, can you go a little further with that?
I mean, I just wasn't sure, like, legally or ethically, like, it's a bit of a gray area. And I feel like it's probably the only gray area in this, in that sense, where it's like, is there like some kind of validity to what Hinkle's saying? Maybe we can take it to small claims court if we want. I'm not going to come out on one side or the other. I was just a little bit like, well, I guess you can go either way on that.
I think Judge Wapner would feel that he threw it away. And he didn't want it anymore. He was done with it. And then it's like, oh, wait, you like that thing that I threw away? Okay, now I want it back.
Yeah, and I feel like you're right. And I think let's bring it to today's day and age, Judge Judy. I feel like Judge Judy would be pretty angry with Hinkle, right? Do you think she'd be pretty sure with Hinkle?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess it is kind of like you sell the thing, you sell something.
You got rid of it.
That you didn't realize was valuable for cheap.
God, wouldn't I would love to see Hinkle in Judge Judy's court with his horrible suit and trying to hold it together in front of Judge Judy.
She would be
he'd be overly deferential and polite, and that would annoy her even more. You know?
Okay. Oh, you know what I want to say before we go into the synopsis? Back somewhere in the 2000s, they did ads for 2.5 Men. And How I Met Your Mother, they took footage from Frosty, and they dubbed in all of the characters' voices from those other shows, and not just their voices, but actual scenes, but raunchy scenes.
Oh.
And it's kind of hard to find, but you can find them on YouTube, and it created a really big outrage with people. Like, how could you desecrate Frosty? But they were ads for, it was an ad for How I Met Your Mother and for Frosty and 2.5 Men, but done in that way. If you want to check them out, it's really kind of funny to see Frosty talking about whores and women and just, it's women.
Being Barney Stinson.
Barney. Yeah, he was one of the voices.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, but it did create an outrage, and I don't.
Maybe Frost is only alive because he had tiger blood in that snow, and it actually had nothing to do with the hat.
That's what I'd like to. I'd like to think. Anyway, okay, inside joke. If you remember Charlie Sheen at his tiger
winning,
blood. Winning,
winning.
So we open with Jimmy Durante walking up, and Durante says it started with a snow, a very special kind of snow, a snow that makes people happier. Giddy people, giddier. Natural enemies become friends naturally. And you see the postman and dog fighting, and then suddenly they get along. Evan, is there a world anymore where there's stray dogs running around that bite postmen? Is there even a world where postmen carry bags and deliver mail in your world anymore, Evan?
I mean,
that's just weird.
I get paper mail. I've never seen any postmen fighting any dogs, but maybe that's just because there aren't any in my building. So...
Kelsey, as a kid, you were still a hangover of that world, right? A little?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we still, like, I grew up where we had a milkman still. So my parents were, and it was the best. And I remember when we got rid of the milkman, Erica and I, we just had a fit. So we just still had a little bit of that.
Just because it was better milk?
Oh, it was so good.
That's what I had heard, yeah.
So good. So yeah, my parents were still a little bit in that era, for sure.
Wow.
But no dogs biting the postman.
You know, it was funny. I swear to God, the 70s was just, it was such a hangover of the world, you know. But I just do remember dogs were rabid and leashless.
Yeah.
And they had to create leash laws. Forget poop laws. They had to create leash laws just to keep dogs on leashes. And yeah, and your postman, you know, was definitely one of the people in your neighborhood. Little Sesame Street shout out. This paints a different world. That's, you know, this whole thing, I think, paints a world that's, we don't, a lot of elements we don't just don't see anymore.
Yeah, 100%. People just let their dogs out for the day. And then the dogs just formed like a pack around the neighborhood, and they were all seen together, like running together and doing whatever they were doing all day.
Well, it makes sense because that was the same way that people took care of their kids.
Out
the door, and then whatever they did in their little gangs of kids, as long as they were back in time for dinner, it kind of didn't matter. Karen was taking the train.
Yeah, Karen's taking the train to the North Pole, and she's like, "Oh wow, as long as I'm back for dinner, my mom won't mind." And it was like, I think a little bit of a joke, but at the same time, that's kind of how it was. You came in when it was dark. You might have heard a bell ring. You heard some parent would scream the person's name for dinner, and then everyone would scatter and run it. But it was, definitely was a different time. There's a certain magic of the first snow, but when first snow is Christmas snow, something wonderful is about to happen. So we're in the classroom and the kids are excited to see the snow, but the teacher of the day, and I love the classic teacher there with the gray hair, the glasses, the ruler, the whole thing going on. By the way, Evan and Kelsey, that's how all the teachers looked back then.
Really?
Yeah, they were young and cool. And
they were all 106.
Yeah.
You didn't have to worry about any of the relationships inappropriately with the school teacher and the kid, because they all looked like your great grandmother. Yeah.
Well, a lot of them, you know, back then my mom was a teacher, and my mom was trained by women who were like that. And we called them from the Mrs. Crabtree generation, if you remember the Little Rascals. But a lot of, back in the day, if you were really smart as a woman, they said, wow, look at you and all your A's. How fancy. Would you like to be a nurse or a teacher?
Yep.
And that was it. So my mom was an A student, and she said, okay, teacher. But a lot of the, now my mom was married, but a lot of the women from the generation before her were single, and that was their life. They were just devoted teachers. But yeah, most of the teachers did look like that. And anyway, the kids are disappointed to have to see a magician 10 minutes before they're about to be let off for Christmas vacation. And I remember even seeing that as a kid and be like, wait, what are you so upset about? You get to see a magician and you're out of there anyway. Sit down.
But wasn't it Christmas Eve day?
Yeah.
So really, this was really old school, because probably back in the day, before there was a Christmas Eve and a Christmas Eve, shout out to Jeffrey Crane Graham, founder of Christmas Eve, the holiday.
Right.
But before that, maybe there was a day kids went to school on Christmas Eve.
Right.
I mean, this year my kids are going to be there on the 23rd. And I know that's not the same thing, but it's just the way the calendar falls. Sunday.
So do you think if the 24th was, say, on a Wednesday back in the 30s, was there school? I bet you there was.
Yeah, probably, because they would probably do a half day so that the kids could make it in time for their shift at the coal mine.
Oh wow, yeah, it was Kelsey and Evan, it was a different world. Different world. He was the worst magician in the world. Messy. We hear him say that, which I think as a comedian he probably did that. I think they probably lifted that from his act, the actor, as a comic. We see him try to do something with the egg. He makes a mess. He finally throws the hat in the trash. And Hocus Pocus the rabbit appears, makes the kid laugh, makes all the kids laugh. The bell rings. The kids run out. Professor Hinkle says, "You would desert Hinkle for some stupid frozen water?" And of course they would. Kids go sledding, and then they make a snowman. And Karen says she's going to make the head. Now, here's interesting. I always was taught the snowman was three big, giant snowballs. But Frosty looks way cooler with the one giant snowball and then the round head. I kind of like that.
Yeah, we always did the three.
It was mostly to get more kids involved. If you only had two, it's like, what's everybody else doing, you know? So yeah, I remember doing the three as well, for sure.
Now I have to say this, and I've held it back all this time. When you see the term Karen being thrown out now, this person's a Karen, but if you think about it, most of the Karens are 40s, 50s, 60s in age. That was a super popular name for children, for girls in the 60s and 70s, which is why they've all grown up to be Karen. So it's interesting, who knew that this Karen would grow up and start so much trouble in our country, you know? Back then, she was so sweet and innocent, but I think it was, yeah.
But now we've all seen cell phone videos of her talking about people who shouldn't be in her neighborhood.
And, yes.
She's lost the Christmas spirit, Kev.
Well, yes. It's so indicative of the time, you know, the name Karen. But then when they come up with names for the snowman, Harold, Bruce, and then the little baby oatmeal? Girl says, no, before oatmeal, Christopher Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
So I felt, I was like, oh my God, poor Evan is going to be beside himself. I was hoping he blocked his ears.
I mean, I got it, but I was like, I'll take oatmeal over Christopher Columbus. We don't have to shout out someone with that kind of history.
Genghis Khan.
I'll take breakfast over a colonizer.
Pol Pot.
I mean, I guess you could do worse.
Attila the Hun.
Yeah. By the way, all decent names.
Sure.
Okay, Karen comes up with Frosty the Snowman. And again, I wrote this note. That's when I heard Rocky the Flying Squirrel's voice. So that's the one moment you can hear June Foray if you want to hear her on this. Hinkle chases Hocus Pocus, who places the hat on Frosty. And of course, that's when we get the happy birthday. Karen says, it's magic. But now Hinkle wants it back. But it's not yours anymore. You threw it away. Don't talk back to elders. Which, again, I don't know. Evan seems to be team Professor Hinkle.
I did not say that. I'll clarify. I'm not on his team. I think it's just the one place where you'd need an impartial third party to maybe come in.
Got it.
I'm not on his team.
You saw it brought Frosty to life. I saw nothing. That hat will make me rich. So you see the greed on him. The kids hug Frosty. They believe in him. And this is where you cue the theme song, sung by Jimmy Durante, and the credit sequence, which I think is really cool. Jimmy Durante continues narrating as we see Hinkle walk down the street. Jimmy Durante claims Hocus Pocus was entirely in the right to take the hat back, as you see Hocus Pocus steals the hat back. Frosty starts to notice, as the kids are dancing with Frosty, Frosty starts to notice it's getting a little warmer. He sweats. They must get into the North Pole where he won't ever melt. They get the idea that they'll go to the train station to go down to the North Pole. Frosty says he always wanted to see the town. And then, you know, he says, let's have a party out of it, which I love the Jackie Vernon kind of New York accent coming out there. Let's have a parade. And then they all march and they leapfrog. Kelsey, Evan, did you ever leapfrog as kids? Was that
heck a yeah? Thing?
Probably.
We in gymnastics, it was more of like we used it as like training. It wasn't fun.
No, Evan, was it fun for you?
Probably. I don't have any distinct memories, but I'm sure I did it.
I feel like that was definitely a 70s and 80s kind of thing.
Oh yeah,
right.
Loved it.
I preferred being leapt over, but the whole experience was always fun. You know, talking about going into, you know, this is what happens when you make a 30-minute special based on a song. You're like, okay, well, we have to do the all through the village because that's in the song. So now we have to go through the village. And it does have one of my favorite Christmas antiquated characters, which is the, all right, what's going on here? You know, the Irish
policeman. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was another staple in the 70s. You couldn't get away from any children's thing, a cartoon or children's programming with, I feel like, yeah, the Irish cop, the Irish beat cop.
And I think he was actually created after the actual guy, an actual policeman in the town.
Really?
Yeah. That I read the police chief was called John Harrigan, which is a good Irish name. And that's who it was created in his likeness.
Great Irish name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Karen explains to the policeman, he just came to life. And so, oh, well, then if he just came to life, he lets him go and then swallows his whistle because he can't believe it. The train station, they want tickets to North Pole. And then it's going to be after printing up about a million tickets and talking about 10 different cities for transfer.
I liked this scene. I liked him fumbling with the tickets. I thought that that was fun.
Kelsey, I just feel like you are just so disconnected from all of this.
I thought it was fun. I was like, oh, this was clever.
It's a classic cartoon interaction.
Yeah, it is.
It does feel very early, like cartoon visual gag.
Yeah, the swallowing the whistle followed by some shenanigans with the tickets.
I hated all of it when I was a kid. Hated all of it. Hated the pie in the face. Hey, just yes, because I just it was just annoying to me. It was like, okay, come on, can we get back to the story? I'm not amused. I don't find this funny. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm not necessarily Team Hinkle like Evan. But I'm getting there. Evan, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Didn't say that. No, I know that, but I'm just saying. I'm getting there. Okay.
Okay.
No money, no ticket. Closes the gate on them. Karen, Frosty, you can't melt. Hocus Pocus shows us the fridge boxcar, which is full of ice cream and ice cream cakes. And then Karen joins along with Hocus Pocus. Mom won't mind as long as I'm back for supper. So as we talked about, different world. Hinkle's onto the train. Hiding. I must get that hat back. Think nasty, nasty, nasty. So I, again, as a comedian, this was all part of his act, always to do the three words.
Of threes, absolutely.
Comedy rule of threes.
Yep.
Jimmy Durante mentions that this is great for Frosty and Hocus Pocus, but not so much for Karen. And we see Karen in there freezing. Frosty knew he had to get her off to warm her up, and he does. And then Hinkle makes a jump for it. Frosty carries Karen through the storm and away from Hinkle. It's very cold. They can't light a fire. He decides to keep moving until they come upon the animals decorating for Christmas Eve. This is one of the many times you see the animals come to the aid of the human characters in the Hanna-Barbera universe. Hocus Pocus explains everything going on. The animals want to help Karen, so they build a nice little fire for her. Just when things seem like they're going to go okay, and Frosty does send Hocus Pocus to the North Pole to get Santa for help, Frosty's keeping a silent vigil. But up comes Evan's friend, Professor Hinkle, who puts the fire out because he doesn't want to see any forest fires out in the wilderness. Evan, I think, was that your take? He put the fire out.
I was just surprised he could. He blew the whole thing out in one go. Was my main reaction.
That was impressive.
That might speak to matters in his private life, but we don't really need to delve into that.
Okay.
Hinkle confronts Frosty, give me the hat or else. And then this was always my favorite scene as a kid into this day. Get on my shoulders, Karen, Frosty says. You see, Frosty was the fastest belly whopper in the world. And so they go down the hill. Frosty and Karen totally outdistancing Hinkle. And it's all good. And then they come up on a greenhouse that's growing poinsettias for Christmas. And Frosty, of course, says, you should go in there to be warm. But I was kind of surprised here. Actually, he says, let's go in. And Karen says, but you'll melt. I'll just stay for a little. Then Hinkle arrives and locks Frosty in. I've got you. Oh, and I remember just being horrified as a kid.
Yeah.
Like that was like legit always. This was always hard. When Unicorn Cornelius passed, and like this was even harder because he was the star. It was Frosty.
Yeah, but this prepared us for Spock dying as adults, Kev.
Yes, this is true.
In Terminator 2, probably.
Yes.
good priming for that.
Santa arrives. Hocus Pocus explains the situation to Santa, but you do see they follow the tracks to the greenhouse, where a terrible sight met their eyes. And then you see these horrified looks on Santa Claus and Hocus Pocus's face. And you see, and this was always made me cry as a kid, when Karen's on her knees, her hands are in her face, and she's bawling over just a puddle with just the hat and the pipe in it. So, like, that always got me as a kid.
Yeah.
That scene, you know, really sad. I give Rankin Bass even more credit for bringing in a slow version of the song. Mari Walls brings in the slow version of the Frosty theme, and then a montage of all the old shots. I mean, really, it's like a death montage, you know, of looking, reflecting back on Frosty's life And I'm not so sure that they would do that today. I don't even know if they would. You know, Christian, you have kids, so I don't know. Do you see a lot of current cartoons that would be this somewhat morbid?
I think
even though because he's redeemed
of how quickly he comes back, I think you still see it. I mean, you know what, like 80 years in, Disney's still killing off a parent in the first 4 minutes of every movie. So
right. Not a parent, the mom always.
Well, Lion King.
That's a little later in the movie, but the Lion King, you're right. It's usually the mom.
Now, Evan, is it in Kelsey, is it usually the Karen or is it generic mom?
Just a generic mom.
Yeah.
It's just always mom.
I mean, one Disney death this did make, and a fairly recent one that this did make me think of, that I would say goes fairly hard with it. Spoilers Spoilers for Big Hero 6. It kind of made me think of, if people know that movie, like Baymax has a similar death in that movie. And I was kind of thinking that could be a good ending to this, where like, I think that movie ends with they make a new version of him. And I was thinking you could just do that with Frosty without the like Santa Ex Machina bit and just have the kids make a new one. And
yeah,
I would
have been done with that. Are you cutting, Evan, you cutting for time, or are you cutting because is this about the patriarchy of Santa? Do we want to eliminate that? Like, what are we thinking about here? Like, what, why are we cutting Santa out for?
Partly because it just,
no,
it felt a little bit, shoehorned in. I guess it's like, well, it's a Christmas thing, so we need a Santa cameo, I guess. That was how it hit for me. Again, like maybe if I'd had, I didn't remember whether he showed up or not. Wasn't exactly surprised to see him in a Christmas thing, but I was just kind of thinking like that would be the way I might have gone about it or liked to have seen it. I'm not mad at this version.
Plus, Hinkle was unjustly sentenced with the 100 zillion times he has to write things for a crime that he allegedly may not have committed, Evan, right? For your words.
And he would have had to post cash bail. So yeah. Obviously there would have been more problems. You know, something Evan was talking about, it, like the storytelling in here, and I do think this every year when I watch it, there's times where you're like, did somebody ask their kid what they thought should happen next? Like, we'll just take a train to the North Pole. Oh, and by the way, he's the greatest belly whopper you've ever seen. And boy, what do we do when we're in a real fix and we need help? I don't know. Just ask for Santa, I guess. You know,
it's brilliant. Like, brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's cute. It fits in the story, but there's a couple of leaps in logic in the storytelling for Frosty.
You know, you hear Durante say they were too late. Karen cries. And then Santa says, too late? Nonsense. He was made of Christmas snow. Christmas snow, which means it never goes away. Yes, but he was my friend. Just watch. And then Santa opens the door. And by the way, you know, so it's not, other than opening the door, it's not necessarily that one action. It's not necessarily Santa, you know, using some magic to bring Frosty back. It was, he was made of Christmas snow. He was going to come back anyway. So I'll say that in defense. I also think that I feel like Ev, you may want to block your ears. I think Professor Hinkle did need a comeuppance of some kind. And I think as a, you know, especially as a kid, I think it was important to see justice, to see an authority figure to come in and kind of slap the hand of Hinkle, but in a way where he gave him space to be redeemed. So he's like, no, okay. You, rather than just cast him aside, he's like, you write this, I'll never hurt Frosty again 100 zillion times. Maybe, just maybe, you'll have a hat. You knew he was going to get a new hat, which is very cool. And I think in one of the sequels, Hinkle is back, but he's now redeemed, and and they focus on his nephew. But again, we'll get into that another day. But yeah, I think
there's a Dangerous Minds iteration where he teaches inner city youth the true spirit of Christmas, and he raps for them. So let's watch that in a future episode.
That's awesome.
And I've got to get busy, 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 and off he goes to do his thing. But I think that, yeah, for me, I think I want to see this without Santa. I thought that, I don't feel like it was a force. I feel like you needed him to come in, and not just to make him a Christmas, but again, unless there was going to be another way for Hinkle to kind of, again, pay a little penance, but then also be redeemed too. I don't know how else you do it. Evan, that'll be your job. You already have an answer.
I think there's a version of this where you don't need Hinkle there after the schoolhouse, really. You just have him leave the hat, and then the villain doesn't even have to, like, you don't need necessarily, I think, a human villain.
They don't need to be chased. In other words, the quest is to get to the North Pole, and then the difficulties of getting through the North Pole is what will reveal the character.
Yeah, it's just, you already have the natural antagonism of just, it's cold, Karen needs to be warm, Frosty can't be. So you already have two characters who want to be together but can't physically coexist. Ooh. I think that's enough conflict. I mean,
Romeo Mueller is spinning in his grave right now, but wow.
So it's just another way you could have. I'm not saying it's necessarily better, but
that does relieve Professor Hinkle. That would handle that injustice. Justice for Professor Hinkle, #.
to the point of Santa being unnecessary. All somebody had to do was open a door, and you don't need Santa on Christmas Eve spending his time doing that. You know, it's like praying to Jesus so that you win the big game. Jesus has other things to worry about. Try and win the big game yourself. You know what, Karen? Why don't you just push that door open and let Santa get back to getting his sleigh ready?
Although who else but Santa could have had Hinkle write something 100 zillion times, which to your point, Christian, that was definitely a kid saying that because...
Oh, yeah.
That was our number. Everything was 100 zillion.
And by the way, I'll try to wrap it up here. Kelsey and Evan, did you ever have punishments where you had to write things 100 times or like?
No, that had phased out. Yeah. But I think it was just you sit in attention.
The days of dunce caps. And being in the corner and right.
See, I was a bad speller though, so I had to rewrite stuff a million times so I could like remember how to spell it, but it wasn't like necessarily punishment.
It was never punishment. It was more interesting. Well, they drop Karen off on the roof of her house. A lot of people get a kick out of that. Like they left this little girl on the three-story roof. Bye. And the iconic, I'll be back on Christmas Day. And then there's the theme song plays and we are out. For Frosty the Snowman. So I'm grateful for this because everyone had a very unique perspective. I didn't realize that. I thought this was going to be so simple, cut and dry, 30 minutes, but no. Justice for Hinkle. Karen obviously was, we can see the early signs of her, I think her politics maybe coming out. Just kidding. I kid. Good stuff. And how do they text us their thoughts on Frosty? And then any other specials they think.
Thanks, Kev. Our text number is 351-251-2511. That text number again is 351-251-2511.
No, very good. And we're closing in on the holidays. There are many specials to cover. My fear with this is that there's only so many good specials to cover, and then there's going to be a lot of bad ones. So, and then a lot of this is predicated on people having to see these. So most people have seen Frosty and Rudolph, so they're easy. Right. It'll be interesting when we start getting into some of the ones people haven't seen. So we'll be asking the audience probably to have to watch some of this wonderful content beforehand. But anyway, all right, you guys, that wraps up this episode of the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. Be sure to check out Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, covered Charlie Brown Halloween. We've covered Friends Thanksgiving. We did a lot of Thanksgiving. Really, we're behind. By the way, for the Christmas Specials We Love podcast, I think Evan would be down on us because I don't know how much we've honored that. Is this only our third Christmas special, you guys, that we've done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well.
More to come, though.
You know, Evan, what do they say? Do better. Right?
Some people do, I guess.
Right? Do better. Professor Hinkle, do better. Or no, excuse me, the creators of this, do better. For Professor Hinkle. All right, you guys, everyone. Merry Christmas. And we say in Boston, we'll talk to you shortly.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.